Log Talk Radio.
Way in which employ technology to you know, as it really was another character in the television series, I think. And I also liked Martin Landau and Barbara Bain, the husband and wife team. They were husband and wife in real life, and they played husband and wife in the series. I love their chemistry. And again, since the series was set up in the 60s, began in the 60s, a smart woman was sort of like not in... was not something that you often saw as a character on television. She was either the sex object or the teacher and sexless, but she was sexy and she was extremely smart. So that was really cool. And I thought Peter Grave was really good as the person who's kind of held the team together. The guy who played the strong man in that series, and I want to say his name was Peter Lupus. I can't remember his exact name. Was probably the weakest of the characters. But still, you know, it was. I really enjoyed watching the series. I just thought it was well done, and it was really good. Now, you know, to segue to the Mission Impossible movie franchise, that I think Tom Cruise has, for the most part, done well in sort of using that franchise as a jumping off point for what he's done with the movies, and I've enjoyed all of them, except for maybe the very first one. I don't think was really my cup of tea. I thought that was probably the weakest of the movies. But the second through the fifth movies, I thought every single one of them were really good, really interesting to watch. They really held your attention. The special effects were awesome. The settings were beautiful. Just the overall design, and then the ways in which he set up these different characters. There's the core IMF force, and then there are these assorted characters that come in each story, and they sort of float in and out. They don't necessarily continue from one story to the next. I also think that he's also done a really good job of setting up interesting stories. Like this particular movie, Rogue Nation, I was wondering what they were going to do because it seemed to me they'd kind of had plowed the field already with, you know, different stories for different reasons. But they managed to find a really interesting story to tell about this sort of rogue group of spies who were set upon... who were determined to create a whole new world order because they didn't like the way the world was running, I guess. And the person who headed this group of rogue spies was extremely insidious. And he really was extremely convincing in his role. And they sort of also did a nice job of sort of setting up this tension between the bureaucrats in the CIA who look downright stodgy compared to the Mission Impossible force and IMF and what they're trained to do. So I thought I really enjoyed it. There were some excellent chase scenes. There was one great motorcycle chase scene with Ethan Hawke and the woman spy who is kind of playing both sides against each other. She's working for the rogues, but she's also British Secret Service, but she was disgraced from them. So it's not really clear which side she's working on. And there's a great motorcycle chase scene. It's just... it's so well done, and there are a lot of. There's another great scene, just from a special effects standpoint, where Ethan Hawke has to jump into a huge tunnel that is filled with pressurized water, and then he has to spend 3 minutes underwater trying to find a chip, And it was a real nail biter. So, it was just, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. What did you think?
Not to announce a spoiler alert, not to give too much more away, but you know what? I really thought it was a nice thrill ride, too. And again, I echo the part about the motorcycle scene. That's wonderful. You know, I'm not a real big chase scene person, to be honest with you. But I think that was well done. And it showed a lot of skill for all the people involved. So, that was a lot of fun. But, yeah, it's a fun ride. It makes sense throughout the whole movie. I like the fact that the British agent was going back and forth, and you're not sure whose side she's truly on.
Right.
Add to the mystique of the film. And Tom Cruise, he's evolved. The evolution of Tom Cruise's character from the first movie to this movie, you see the true evolution. And here's a guy who is just this great agent. But what I liked was the vulnerability that you start to see in him.
And
how important this is and how passionate he is for this thing to succeed. But what was great was the fact that even he, with all his abilities, all his friends with all their abilities, they all were sitting there kind of biting their own nails. Like, are we going to be able to do this? You know, usually in Mission Impossible, you know, they get the team, they get their orders, and they go out and they achieve what's necessary, and they seem to always be one step ahead of everybody. In this film, they're just not sure about anything. And I think that helps the believability, if nothing else, of this particular film. And, you know, that made it that much more exciting because now you don't even think they know what's going to happen. And I think that really added to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. I think those are excellent points. I think the difference here is, a big difference, is that now you've got the CIA really not only disavowing them, but dismantling them. So I think in the earlier films, they were more assured because they had a base of support. They knew that they had support back home for what they were doing from the secretary and from, you know, from the Senate Intelligence Committee or, you know, whatever, that core group. They knew that they had that support. But in this film, they don't have that support at all. So it makes it harder to just feel like, yeah, we can basically take on anything because, you know, they basically had a vote of no confidence. They got a vote of no confidence from the CIA and from Congress.
So what really is funny about this film is we always hear the terms covert. We know in this film they truly were because, you know, as far as anybody was concerned, they didn't exist. And how they existed, the CIA wants to know because they need to bring these agents in and this just isn't one of the normal scenarios of any of these quote-unquote covert ops groups. So it was really cool. I must admit it was a fun movie, a skilled movie. A lot of the action scenes made sense, and it was just fun. It was fun to watch, and I could watch it again in a minute.
I could definitely watch it again, and 4, and 3, and 2, every single one of those movies. Now, one thing I did notice that struck me as a little strange was Simon Pegg's character, Benji. Yes, Simon Pegg's character, Benji, who, I don't know, there's this part towards the beginning where he's at the Vienna Opera and Ethan Hawke is saying, well, you know, I want you to do thus and so, and then I need you to go home. And Benji's like, well, I'm not going home. And he's like, and Ethan's like, well, I can't protect you, so you really need to go home. And then he's like, well, you know, I'm a field agent. I'm not doing anything, and you're my friend, and I'm not leaving you, so we're not discussing this anymore. And I'm like, well, wow, okay, great. And then he spends the rest of the movie just, like, screaming, nail-biting, scared out of his wits, you know, shaking. And I'm like, for a field agent, he sure is. He sure doesn't mind having his emotions on his sleeve at all. I mean, it's like everybody else is like, you know, stoic. They're, you know, even if they're face-to-face with the enemy, he's like, ugh. And I'm like, you're a field agent, really? Because I'm having a little trouble with that one.
Well, that's the irony, because throughout all of the different films, Benji has really just been trying to, like, well, I can do this. I can do that. I can do this. And they, no, we got it. We got it. And so here's his opportunity, and he's like, okay, can I do this? Can I really do this? I think what it is other than just being part of the comic relief,
right.
It is part of everyone realizing that despite Benji's innermost, I'm this great agent kind of mystique inside himself, the true reality is he's still who he is. And
right. So don't take him. Don't bring him on the mission.
Fortunately, it just means that he's still going to be able to do the things that they need him to do, and they shouldn't expect more. And I, as you watch the film, you realize that they didn't. But here's the thing. He does come to their rescue. Even he's that, what do they call it in the literature? The unlikely hero.
He saves
the day a few times. It's just that,
yes, he does. He does.
So
but it just people. I mean, yes, it is comic relief, but I'm like, he can't really be a field agent, you know. It's like, come on, you know, like when the car chases and he's like, oh my god, you're going too fast, oh my god, oh, are we gonna make it, oh, they're shooting, you know. It's like, I think you're supposed to be a little cooler than that, because you're supposed to be used to that.
But you know, he was most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time within the series of films, he was kind of you know, out of the reach of the villainous element. So
yeah,
this time
that's
he
true.
Was point. He was right in the middle of it. So it is a very different thing for him. But you know what? He still stayed resilient throughout the film, and you know, sitting there being well, I don't want to give too much away. So
right,
he still manages to be a part of the team even more so than even he thought.
Right. And the other thing that I want to bring up before we move on to our other film is an undercurrent of this movie, which may go unnoticed. And that's the connection between Turandot, the opera, and this movie. That the theme, Turandot, I'm not an opera fan. I can't stand opera, to be perfectly honest. But there are those one or two operas that they just, their music is just so beautiful. It's almost like transporting. Turandot is one of those operas. The theme, and even if you're not an opera fan, you know, you're very likely to recognize the music because it's just been used so often in different contexts. The music's very poignant, compelling. It's just gorgeous. And that movie, you know, these sort of larger-than-life themes that were present in the opera Turandot were sort of a backdrop for the larger-than-life issues that the IMF force was dealing with in the movie. And I love just the way that some of these themes from Turandot just ran throughout the movie. And it really just added a nice touch.
I agree. Well, we're running out of time, so why don't we go ahead and jump into the next film, which is The Man from U.N.C.L.E. This is
we don't need to spend that much time on this one.
that was basically based off of a TV show back in the mid-60s. I really enjoyed the TV show, both TV shows, actually. They were two of my favorite shows back then. And the fact that they were making The Man from U.N.C.L.E. into a film, I was just totally excited until I saw the movie. So here's the thing. I thought it started off really well for the first 5 minutes, and then it got increasingly bad. It really didn't give me that same feeling that I had and the cohesiveness that the TV show had for the two agents involved here. So in this particular film, we have agents from the United States and agents from Russia put together to try to stop the villains in this film. And they spend so much time in trying to mesh the characters that the rest of the movie seemed to be forgotten. What did you think of this?
I hated this movie. I couldn't wait for it to be over. In the first place, I'm not. I can't say that I was a. I loved Mission Impossible, the TV series. I was not as big a fan of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It was okay, and that to me, that was one of those series where if there was nothing on, then maybe I would watch it. But I'd be as likely as not to watch it. I thought The Man from U.N.C.L.E., the television series, I mean, in retrospect, I mean, now it's definitely a classic, and Robert Vaughn and I can't remember who the co-star who played Ilya Kuryakin.
Go ahead.
But though, you know, I mean, they really became icons because of this. Because of the television series, and a lot of what I didn't necessarily enjoy when I saw the series when it was on television has sort of become, you know, very, very classic and very, you know, almost cult-like. So I think I would like the series more if I was watching it now than I did when the series was actually on the air. But the series took itself very seriously. So, you know, I think... there's some of these series that deal with those types of things, and it really helps if they're kind of like, if they don't take themselves too seriously, or you feel like there's kind of like a wink going on at different parts. And to me, there weren't enough winks in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., so they just took themselves too seriously. But that television series far and away blows out of the water this sad, sad, I hesitate to even call it a film, but this Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie was, I could not wait for it to be over. Oh, my goodness. I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I get these assignments and I don't mind doing them, except that there are times when I feel like I need some combat pay, and this movie is one of those times. It was just, I mean, really, again, just very... cardboard, I mean, one-dimensional characters, people that I couldn't be bothered with having a glass of water with, let alone lunch or dinner or anything, because they were so boring. They walked around in 1960s clothing, the women did, well, men did too, and, you know, they were very self-possessed, and they had zero personality. I could care less about what happened to any of them. And, like, Henry Cavill played Robert Vaughn's role in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and I love Henry Cavill as an actor. He was awesome in The Tudors, for example. But in this movie, I mean, they could have put a wind-up doll. They could have put a wind-up doll in that movie, and the doll would have done just as good a job as he did. And Armie Hammer, too. I mean, I like Armie Hammer as an actor, you know. But it seemed like they were kind of like, you know, there were a couple of Kens and two Barbie dolls, Alicia Vikander and Elizabeth Debicki. they were all like these Barbie wind-up dolls. And then Hugh Grant sort of came in and did his sort of, you know, knowing, you know, head of the unit thing. But it didn't add anything to the movie at all. It was just, it was a snooze. It was a bore. Could care less. It was like, please kill them, let them live. I don't care. Just make it stop. That was what I thought of the movie.
Well, just to mention about Elliot Kurtykin, it was David McCollum.
Oh, David McCollum, right.
In the 60s. And the actor, what was it? Bear with me a second here. I have to get my mind back here. Henry Cavill.
Right, who played...
Give me a second. If he played the role that I know him for, it still wouldn't have added to this film. Superman could not have successfully come into this film and actually saved it. And he actually did a decent, better job as Superman than he did in this film as Solo.
Right.
I was so disappointed because I really had true anticipation for this particular film to come out. I've been waiting after I had heard it. The best part about this film were the official trailers. And best part of the film. And the whole thing was, you know, we talk about advertisement, social media, whatever, getting you to the theater, getting you to rent the DVD, getting you to buy the Blu-ray, getting you to stream the film. Okay, all those different venues, all those different platforms, you know, it's a waste of wax, a waste of plastic, a waste of stream, a waste of film, a waste of directing. I, too, thought everybody in this movie, you hit it on right on the head, Karen, everybody in this movie is so smug.
Oh, yes.
It was like, I don't know what it was like. It was really bad.
It was like watching a bunch of really snobby people at Cannes or Monaco or, you know, at the Hamptons walking around just sort of congratulating themselves on how rich they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, well, I'm bored. I'm really bored.
And what I thought even early in the film, which was really bothering me, when Napoleon Solo, which is Cavill's character.
Henry Cavill's character.
Right. He keeps showing up. It was annoying. I'm like, dude, they're smart. You know, the girl lived on the other side of the wall. You know, during Europe back in when Germany was East Germany, West Germany, and so these are smart people. And we have this Russian spy. He's a smart guy. He doesn't need you to show up every 2 seconds. He's like, I got this. It's like,
right.
Crazy.
Right.
Well,
right.
As usual, we are running out of time here on A Real Point of View. We obviously have a lot of points of view.
Can I say just one more thing? One more quick thing. My favorite part of this awful, awful movie was the soundtrack. There were a couple of really good songs from the 60s and some jazz stuff and then some, like, sort of early rock pop sorts of songs. That was the best part of the movie.
I agree. Well, ladies and gentlemen, sorry we run out of time here on A Real Point of View. Thanks for joining us, and come back and visit us again. Check out our archives, and if you have any questions or concerns, you can hit us up on Facebook on our fan page, and you can send questions to KD Movie Maven on Twitter. And you can send messages to Real Movie Guy on Twitter if you have any questions or concerns, and definitely movies you'd like us to see and critique on A Real Point of View. Thanks again for hanging out with us, and we'll see you at the movies. Peace.